Yeah, I mean, so lipo in general, when we talk about lipo, there's, we said there, to kind of break it down, there's skin and then there's muscle down here, and there are generally two to sometimes even three layers of fat. So generally when you're lipo, you want to go in the deeper layer, and then anything you do in the superficial layer is for contouring. So, we talk about like excisional procedures. This is kind of getting away from the death part, but anytime we're cutting skin off, I use lipo on 99.9% of surgeries because you don't get shape and contours without lipo.
Hey guys, it's Mel, your host of the Cutting Edge Podcast. This is a show where we talk transformation from every angle, body, mind, and confidence with a little sparkle and a whole lot of truth. I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Dr. Omar Bates, and the plastic surgery pro, and Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, our go-to therapist and mindset queen. Now, quick disclaimer, none of us are your doctor or therapist. We are just here sharing real talk, real stories, and real growth. So grab your protein shake, settle in, and let's get into it. This is The Cutting Edge.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy, and your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Welcome back to the Cutting Edge Podcast, and we are doing a whole series about fears, and we've already done a couple. And this one's just going to be a big one, and it's going to be about death. So I'm so happy we have a therapist in the house and we have a plastic surgeon to tell us what the likelihoods of this. But yeah, let's start talking about it. Thank you, Ashlyn and Dr. Bates, for this today.
Good to be here.
Yes, this is an interesting topic because we cannot guarantee that you will not die. Correct. So you cannot tell your anxiety that the truth is that you cannot die, but you have to balance that with the possibility, with the probability, and that it's highly unlikely. These are elective surgeries. We would not just do willy-nilly on anybody, that your surgeon would not want to take a risk that you wouldn't. Most likely, they're a good surgeon. And Dr. Bates, I'm sure you
Yeah, we don't want you to die.
Yeah, they definitely don't want you to die. Yeah. Not worth the risk or the malpractice payout. So I think that there's like a balance there, but it is something that happens. So sometimes people are like, well, I just want to pretend like it's something that can't happen. And it's like, well, that's not true. And your brain knows that. So it's a balance.
Hence the anxiety. Because, I mean, with any surgery, that's a possibility. So it's just there. What do you tell patients, Dr. Bates? Do they ask?
You know, it comes up very infrequently, I think. It does come up. Usually it's moms, I would say, especially moms of younger kids. I mean, I think moms in general, but moms of younger kids obviously fear dying or something terrible happening and then not being around to care for their kids, which is a very understandable feeling. And I tell them, If you're not healthy enough, again, I'm just speaking for myself here, but if you as a patient are not healthy enough to go to the operating room, I'm not taking you to the operating room. We're going to tell you, you know what? You can live with that loose skin. You can live with your diastasis. You can live with small breasts or big breasts or whatever you're coming in to fix or perhaps, have operated on, because your life is not worth taking this risk. Right. That usually upsets patients, but I think in the grand scheme of things, they're like, okay, well, this surgeon's concerned for my safety and I understand. So I start by telling them, if you were not healthy, then we would not be having this discussion. I would have told you, I'm not a candidate, and you would have walked out that door, before we had the consultation. And so I tell them, we're going to check all our T's, dot our I's. We want to make sure we get clearances if it's appropriate. We get labs, EKGs, chest X-rays. Again, when appropriate, we don't get this on everyone. Right. And then I tell them, the risk is, it's not that it's zero, as you said, it's just very, very, very low. And someone who's young and healthy and has minimal comorbidities, pretty normal to not super high BMI, because that can affect your risk factors. And so all these things come into play when we talk about safety profiles. And so at the end of the day, some of the other things sometimes I tell patients, like the risk of dying from anesthesia with elective plastic surgery in a healthy patient is about 1 in 100,000. And the risk of getting struck by lightning is about 1 in 140,000. So
Hey friends, this episode is sponsored by findabariatrictherapist.com because bariatric life is full of ups and downs and everything in between, but you don't have to go through it alone. findabariatrictherapist.com makes it easy to connect with therapists who truly understand your journey, the mindset shifts, the identity changes, and all the real life challenges that come after surgery. Because therapy designed for bariatric patients changes everything. Visit findabariatrictherapist.com and find your support today.
You know, very unlikely. Odds are pretty, pretty low.
What do people actually die from? Like, if someone was going to die, like, what would be the underlying condition that would cause that?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that, but I'm going to finish answering the first question. So, Mel, I think the other thing I tell patients that's important is we don't work, like, we're not working on the heart. We're not working on, you know, near the aorta or these big vessels, like a femoral vessel, which is your big, like, vessel. We're working on skin and fat, and the deepest we go is sometimes, you know, sewing the muscle. Again, this is for the things that I do. On the face, you might be working on bones or something like that. But even then, you're not working near any big arteries that if you accidentally were to hit one, it's going to suddenly like cause a lot of blood loss and lead to death. So, Ashlyn, to answer your question, usually it's going to be a cardiac issue or a pulmonary issue. And a lot of times it's just a, you know, something went wrong with, we didn't know if there was a heart problem. Or there is a known heart problem that just wasn't able to be corrected in the operating room, leads to like either, you know, you kind of flatline or you have a heart attack and you do compressions and all that. Or it's a breathing issue. You know, one of the biggest risks, but again, very low risk with anesthesia is when they give you medications to put the breathing tube down. I think we might've talked about this, the larynx, right? The part that connects your trachea to your lungs can spasm. And then they can't get air, and even if they were able to ventilate you, so that can be a problem, and that could be one of the causes. You know, things like medication errors. It's really unlikely to die from the surgery itself. You know, we've seen it happen, but usually it's a bad surgeon. Like, you know, there was a guy in Orlando. I don't know if we've talked about this before. He was a gynecologist doing liposuction, and killed a patient doing lipo. But again, what? He wasn't well trained. Yeah. Ashlyn, did you hear that story?
Yeah.
Back in like 2019, I think.
Got like a vein or something. Like they bled out, right?
He hit many, many things,
it was
unfortunately.
Really strange. I remember reading the report and being like, whoa. Even if he did a weekend course in Hawaii and showed up for half of the time, it seemed odd that he made that many errors.
He made, yeah, I mean, he hit a lot of organs, which you should never even be close to. I think his license, I'm not sure actually his license has been suspended. I think just he can't do liposuction. So,
in the first place.
Well, correct. He shouldn't be, but I think.
I would hope he at the very least would have left town.
Yeah. In terms of, I don't think he's left town, but in terms of the surgeries themselves, they're usually very, very low risk. So you're not dying from blood loss or, you know, you nicked an artery that led to bleeding or something like that. It's generally going to be a heart or a lung issue.
Okay. Yeah. And so the pulmonary, like, that's the heart, right?
Lungs.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my. Because, like, didn't we talk about, like, blood clots? Isn't that a thing?
Yes, blood clots are another thing. That's usually not going to happen in the operating room.
Okay.
That's usually a risk about two weeks to 30 days. So let's say like 15 to 30 days after surgery. And it's the highest risk is with a tummy tuck. Okay. Other surgeries can increase the risk, but that's the one that has the highest risk of a blood clot. And the way those are fatal is they usually start on your leg. And then a little piece of it breaks off and makes its way into your lungs and blocks a segment of your lung. And then that area can't get oxygen. But if it's a big enough chunk that breaks off, it can block like a big segment of your lung or both lungs. And that can be deadly. That's not going to happen immediately in the OR. That's usually going to happen afterwards.
So why?
Well, fun fact.
Oh,
he did lose something. His license completely. He is no longer practicing.
Yes, that's what I
they
wanted.
Completely removed his license.
There must have been something else that happened afterwards, or the last I had read, he had just been barred from doing lipo.
Yeah, no, he's done.
He was also like involved in a fraud case in New York, there's a lot of interesting things.
It looked like there's some other things that the board was like, my friend, you made several poor choices. Yeah. And
you are.
Yeah, and he was doing a BBL. He wasn't just doing lipo. He was going to then put it back, like another level of complication that he probably should not have been doing. Not that he should have been doing the lipo to begin with, but then to he was going
to do that, like another scary level. Like that's not he just lipo anymore. He came to our hospital,
unfortunately, and died there. Yeah.
Wow.
Do you see them?
No, I mean, usually they're like, they come into the trauma patient.
Oh.
And I mean, I'm sure I wasn't there, but I'm sure she was essentially kind of dead at the, at his office, but kind of just had, she probably had a pulse when she came to the hospital, but she was not someone I think that they were going to save at that point, unfortunately.
I wonder if she knew she was patient one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Not with this jackass. He's like, he's probably like, oh yeah, I've done this a million times.
But that's like, have you seen that Netflix Bad Surgeon?
Mm-mm.
Oh God!
Netflix. The Dr. Death one, the neurosurgeon.
Yeah, it's yes,
yeah. That's a popular. That's a known story.
Woo, woo! And then he just go, or instead of like losing his license, he just moved around, and then the hospital
instead of them kind of running it in his records. I don't know why they do this with physicians. It's like it's some protected thing, but instead of kind of putting it in his records and firing him, they would sit him down and say, "If you quit, then there won't be any repercussions." So we would quit and then go work at another hospital in town or in this was all in Texas. I think it was in Dallas. And he just did the same thing. Like he would cause like people to become paralyzed and die. And
he was trying to do a technique he was perfecting that wasn't actually working and was harming people, but he wanted to prove that it was like,
that it does work.
That it works.
Yeah. That is wild. Well, thank God that's not happening anymore. At least we hope.
Yeah.
So let's see. So with death, I want to talk to Ashlyn now.
Okay.
So when people come in, is this like a high like question for you as a therapist when they're getting surgery?
I think that the initial bariatric surgery, the fear is definitely more there. I have a lot more clients that their first thing is like, I'm afraid I'm going to die. They have a lot of risk factors. That's why they're having bariatric surgery. So for a lot of my clients, by the time they're coming around for plastics, particularly post-bariatric, not as much. Now, I have had clients who are not bariatric and have come in for plastics, and death is a lot more on their mind than I would say my bariatric clients.
Okay.
I think a lot of my bariatric clients, too, have seen such health benefits from the bariatric surgery. They feel like they're in a better place physically. And I do think bariatric doctors are a lot more used to, is probably the wrong word there, to a higher risk patient population.
Okay, yeah.
They acknowledge that everyone they operate on is high risk, and that's a different mindset than I would say most of my plastic surgeons. Most of my plastic surgeons will not operate on higher BMIs, will not operate on, like, their risk aversion that way is less.
Mm-hmm.
And that may also be because of location. So if you only operate, and Dr. Bates could talk more about like the different places you operate and the risks that you can operate in those places. But I think that that's most of my clients that come in and are worried about that. I would agree with you. Parents of young children, they don't want to be remembered as the mom that died because she got a tummy tuck.
Yep.
I think there's some
Kanye West's mom.
Yeah, it's kind of got like lipo, right? So like, they don't want you know, a lawn named after that. I had one client, it's like, I wouldn't want a lawn named after me, and I was like, well, we already have that law. So.
Yep, already done.
Why Kanye West sings about lipo for your money?
Lipo for your money.
Geico no, that's what money. The baby mama spent
This is from
Kim?
This is Gold Digger song.
Oh my God, no, that's like
So he's describing how a guy like left his a lady left him and getting lipo with his money.
He's supposed to get Geico
with his money.
When he got then he says he wish he went and got lipo with your money.
That's right. That's right.
I think the one like that you're saying is like I wouldn't want to die on the table.
No.
And be like the mom, you know, like remembered as, oh, the mom's so vain. She went and got her lipo done, her stuff done, and now she's dead. Like, look, she shouldn't just live with it. Like, I do understand that thought process, because that has crossed my mind too, where it's like, you know, I've like some, because I've had actually an old friend, very judgy friend. She said that if I got plastics, she said that that's too vain for me, because like I got bariatrics to get skinny, and I go, no, I got bariatrics to get healthy. But she thought I got it to get skinny. And she's like, you really think you need to go a next step? And I was like, well, for me, and I've talked about this on this pod too, is that like, it's like a reset. So it's like, I would love to get plastic. So that way it's like, hey, now I have this body that I know how to use. And that's really the deal. It has nothing to do with like being vain. It's like, hey, like I was meant to actually like have this kind of skin. So in these spots, and I would like to have them there. You know? Like,
yeah. I had a friend say to me, I think when I went back for a revision, she was like, I just never viewed you as someone who's that vain. And I was just like, oh, well, you know, it's a revision. I think, too, it's very hard for people to understand, like, if I had a whole bunch of money, I wouldn't have had 6 surgeries.
Right. They don't understand that.
It had to be staged because I couldn't financially do it all, or nor was it a good idea to do it all at once. But, like, I think that's a hard concept for people who are not in this realm at all, or that, like, the revision specifically that I had was still about function. And so like we still were at a part where like the function wasn't there. It wasn't like, cause it didn't look right.
You're not just keep adjusting yourself. Like you're actually getting things done.
And that, I think are functional. Her comment was more like saying to me, like, how do you know when to stop? I think you're overdoing it. Like, I think that's kind of where she was going with it, though. Her choice of words there, I was kind of like, ooh.
Yeah.
Again, we had to have that conversation about like function, like what's the point, and showing her some of like, this is what the revision is going after. Oh, yeah, you do still have a lot of skin there. I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I think the main point, though, is that kind of like you said, Ashlyn, bariatric surgery, high risk, right? People obese, super obese, morbid obesity, whatever you want to call it. But often a lot of those patients have poorly controlled diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, sleep apnea. Those things are all like significantly increased your risk. I mean, God help the bariatric surgeons, a good job for them. They take on kind of some of the riskiest patients to do those surgeries. And so I tell patients, when you come to see me, you're usually in great shape, right? You're off or almost off all diabetic meds. Most people take very little they might have been on 3 blood pressure medications. They're either on 1 or 0. The sleep apnea is better controlled or, again, non-existent. So the risk factors there are significantly less than patients before their bariatric surgery. That's probably the riskier of the two surgeries, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they are dealing with, like, way riskier patients. It's crazy. So, I mean, what do you tell them, Ashlyn, like, when they're freaked out like this? Like, do you highly logical with them, you know, or like, no, what do you do?
I think I kind of meet it like, that is true. Like, I remind, like, that is true. You can die. So let's get like factual information. Like, what are your risk factors? What's the possibility you could? Is there anything you can do to negate it? Like, if a doctor's saying you're not healthy enough, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't just find the next surgeon who will do it, or go somewhere else where they will do it. Like, don't take those kind of risks. And that seems silly, but there's certainly people out there, you know, who will just keep doctors shopping until someone says yes.
Yep.
And unfortunately, because there's a financial benefit, like eventually someone may say yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things, sorry to cut you off, but that's one of the things I warn patients when they come in, and I tell them, this is like not a good plan for you. And I will tell them, you can go see other people and you might eventually knock on enough doors that someone is going to say yes, but that doesn't mean that that's the right answer. Yeah. And sometimes I tell them that even if, like, you know, we might be talking about, they come in and they want to talk about like cool sculpting or some non-invasive things. This is not so much safety, but more of like spending your money and getting a bad result. I'll tell them, you know, I'm going to tell you this is a bad idea. You can go get other opinions. But again, you might get enough opinions that eventually someone says, yeah, let's do that. But then that they're just doing it because they're, you know, going to laugh on the way to the bank, but they're not really getting you the good result. So,
yeah. And sometimes too, this is kind of hard as a therapist too, because this is kind of on the like borderline of like medical advice and like where I can stop and end. But like, okay. I do sometimes recommend, if I know my client's anemic, they get their ferritin checked, because if their hemo is fine, but their ferritin is really low and they have a catastrophic bleeding event, like that can be problematic. So like their surgeon may not click into that they need their ferritin check because their hemoglobin looks okay. I may say, hey, I know you get those infusions. Let's make sure your ferritin is good, because you bleed during surgery. And so even, you know, small amount, like I always made sure that I had an infusion right before. So that way my ferritin was at its best place at storage of iron, which helps with recovery also. So sometimes, again, trying to like negate some of those potential risk factors. Do you regularly look at ferritin? Because we can be kind of sneaky in that way, where our hemo is fine, but our ferritin is tanked.
That's a good question. I don't believe that we routinely check it unless someone has a history of anemia.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a weird one, because you're probably going to be fine, but like it. What I always worry about is if I was in a car accident and my ferritin's a 6, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
You know, and my ferritin gets into the single digits when it gets bad. So like I'm always on top of it looking for it, but it's weird because my hemo looks fine. My hemoglobin looks fine on paper, even when I'm at a 6, because my body is getting iron from food, but it can't maintain it when I lose it during my periods. So it depletes the ferritin, but the hemo stays okay from food. And so it looks really weird, because you shouldn't be able to have a ferritin at a 6 and your hemo look fine. But in bariatric patients, sometimes that happens.
It does happen. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unless
there's a history of problems, though, we don't usually worry too much about it, because especially if your hemoglobin's normal, if you come in and you're 12.5, you're not losing like 6 units of blood, right, in a plastic surgery operation. Even in one that we do that's like 10 hours long, we have very, very, very little blood loss, like maybe 50 cc's, which is, it's 50 cc's. Like, 2 ounces?
Sure.
I'm going to have to look that up.
That sounds right.
No idea.
Does lipo more blood loss?
Huh?
Sorry?
Does lipo or skin removal have more blood loss?
It's 1.7 ounces. I wasn't far off. Does lipo or skin removal? So I think it depends. I think in our hands, probably the lipo, because when I do skin removal, I don't think a lot of surgeons do this, but we inject like a dilute epinephrine or adrenaline solution in the area right beneath the skin. So before we actually make our incision, we inject the solution all throughout underneath the skin, because right underneath your skin are usually the kind of big, or not big, but the arteries and veins that tend to just bleed. People will spend time like cauterizing them, like, you know, using electricity to stop the bleeding. But doing that, you're either going to spend a lot of time or burn the skin, which is the layer you're trying to protect because that's the layer you're going to be suturing. Or you just kind of leave it and the patient just kind of oozes over like this 4-hour period, let's say, or 3-hour period while you do it. So there's this constant kind of like little bloodletting. Sorry, is that too graphic?
Oozes. No, I just pictured ooze. So
no, it reminds me of that guy that got the lipo and it looked like a murder scene.
Oh, that guy.
Oh, my gosh. We'll talk about it.
So I would say generally lipo, and lipo's not that bloody, but you're just asking which one's bloodier. I would say for me, it's usually the liposuction. Even though, again, we're really not losing a whole lot of blood. Like on a 10-hour case, we might lose 50 cc's, which again is like less than 2 ounces.
So, okay, I want to talk about ferritin real quick. So ferritin is basically iron, right? That's your iron levels in your blood? Or am I wrong?
It is your iron reserve, essentially your iron reserve, yeah.
Okay, so why? People are going to wonder, like, why is that important? So, like, why do we need it at a certain level so that way we're safe? What can happen?
You want to say this from medical? I'm going to speak out of it. It's out of scope for me, but.
You essentially need ferritin to be able to bind iron and carry oxygen. And so if you don't have enough of it, then you are, even if your blood levels are normal, like Ethan was saying, it's difficult for your body to then bind the iron that's there.
Okay. And then if you do surgery, then it would, like, would we bleed more? Would we have a heart attack? Like, what's happening?
I'm sorry, say that again.
So, like, if you performed on someone that had a low ferritin, what would happen?
If they had a low ferritin, so again, it's not a big deal. Unless, I mean, you know, like, absence, like, if I was an accident. Say, if you're in an accident, unless you have internal bleeding, you might lose a liter of blood internally. Okay. That's a problem because then your body is going to have a very hard time making new blood cells.
Okay.
And binding iron. Whereas again, in an operation, unless again, something goes horrifically wrong, or, and again, we're specifically talking about plastic surgery, but like if you're having a heart surgery, that's probably a bigger issue because they may lose a lot of blood. Whereas in plastic surgery, we're going to lose a little bit. And it shouldn't be such an issue if you start at a normal hemoglobin. Now, if you start at like an 8 or a 9, that could be a problem. But that's a problem more so from a hemoglobin standpoint, not so much from a ferritin standpoint.
Gotcha. Okay. I just wanted to. No, it does. Our people like science, so I figured, like, let's just go a little further on that one.
Do you have an impact healing?
I don't think it's been shown to impact healings.
So what were you going to say, Ashlyn?
No, I thought it impacted healing.
Oh. I mean, that makes sense.
A catastrophic bleeding event. My biggest concern is always catastrophic bleeding events, which is an unnecessary fear, but one that I can negate the best I can by staying on top of it and ensuring that it doesn't, you know, that I do whatever's within my control not to have a catastrophic bleeding event. Because I really don't want to have a transfusion. So I just don't feel good with those. Infusions, I feel great. Transfusion.
Okay. But you're talking about like transfusion, which is like blood being put into you.
Yeah. To like blood product.
Oh, they did that.
Some people make them feel great.
Well, there's different. So usually when we say transfusion, we're talking about blood. Sometimes people say transfusion, but really what they mean is maybe an infusion of iron. So people who are anemic.
Yes.
You know, there's different causes of anemia, right? If you bleed, you're anemic. But the most common type of anemia is iron deficiency anemia. So sometimes people with that type of anemia will get iron infusions.
Yes, I get that.
Ashlyn, I think you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah, we both have. Yep.
And that's very common in bariatric patients.
Yeah, in bariatric patients, yeah.
What's riskier, the lipo or the actual surgery itself?
Like from a death standpoint or from a complication? From a death standpoint. Okay. Or like what surgery is most likely?
Really both likely? Not risky, but I would say from a death standpoint, I mean, I would just say lipo only because, and again, we're like picking it. What's the saying? Like picking at hairs here?
Yeah.
Putting hairs. Yeah. Picking at straws. It's probably lipo only because it is a blind technique, right? It's inserting a cannula through a small hole and you can't see where the tip of the cannula is. So if you, again, we're someone maybe who's not well trained, and I'm sure even in a good plastic surgeon's hands, maybe out of a million surgeries, one person could die. Whereas when we're cutting, you can see everything you're working on. But I can think of some scenarios where you can get into trouble even in an open surgery. So I don't know. That's a tough one to answer.
No, and then I kind of wanted you to kind of go through the layer of the skin into where you would lipo at. So like, because it's skin and then fat, right?
Yeah, skin. Fat, and then you have muscle, and then thin layer above the muscle that's called the fascia. This is where the lipo cannula should live.
Okay, so guys, they're going in between the skin and the fascia, which is right on top of the muscle. So they shouldn't be anywhere inside of you. It should actually be like on that top level layer. And there's supposed to be 7 layers of skin. Is that right?
There's 5 layers of the dermis. I mean, the skin is still thin, though, right? Like, there's many layers as there are. There's, like, anatomic layers. There's 5 layers of dermis, and there's the epidermis. I'm not sure what the 7th one is.
Oh, there might not be 7. I just thought it was 7. I was trying to figure out, like, okay, like, you know, visually, like, what it would look like. Because I think for me, like, that would make me feel better is knowing, like, okay, how far are you actually going down under the skin? What would that actually look like? And I've seen your videos, so I know what you're doing now. So,
yeah, I mean, so lipo in general, you know, when we talk about lipo, there's we said there, to kind of break it down, there's skin and then there's muscle down here. And there are generally two to sometimes even three layers of fat. So generally when you're lipo, you want to go in the deeper layer. And then anything you do in the superficial layers for contouring.
Oh.
So, you know, we talk about like excisional procedures. This is kind of getting away from the death part. But anytime we're cutting skin off, I use lipo on 99.9% of surgeries because you don't get shape and contours without lipo. If you just did skin removal, it's doesn't really, I mean, I don't say it doesn't look good, but in most patients, they need some definition. They need some shapes and contouring, bringing the waist in, you know, kind of carving out the midline here, the ab muscles, that's all done with lipo.
Oh, okay.
So for us, they're always combined together, which also when you were asking like, which one's riskier, we always do them hand in hand. So.
Well, and you said earlier that the tummy tuck is the one that people are afraid of for blood clots. Why is that?
So the notion is believed that when you, so, you know, blood clots form when there's stasis, right, or lack of movement in the lower extremity. So some of the risks are like sitting for a long period of time, like long car rides. Air travel is another risk factor, like flights over 2 to 3 hours are because of the high altitude. And low oxygen and also kind of the dry air. And again, if you're doing a long flight, you're just kind of not moving for a long period of time, legs down. So general anesthesia, similarly, when you're having surgery, your leg muscles aren't pumping, right? So anytime you walk, the muscles in the leg are helping the blood go back from the lower extremities up back to your heart. And that muscle pump action is pushing the blood back up so it doesn't sit still. And that happens throughout the day. But under general anesthesia, that's not happening because your muscles are asleep, or your body's asleep and your muscles aren't moving. And so, you know, if anyone who's had surgery, you probably had those like little, they're called SCDs, they're little squeezers on your calves. People tend to like them. They feel like massages. You don't like them?
No. I do not like
them. I have patients who tell me they want to take them home.
I like them. I like them a lot.
Yeah.
But I had to wear, oh, sorry, keep going.
No, go ahead.
I would say I had to wear them because when my leg was broken, they were like, I was like, what? I remember waking up being like, what the fuck are these things? And they're like, it's going to turn on for a little bit. It's going to move and then it's going to turn off. And I was like, okay. And they're like, we just want to make sure you don't get a blood clot at all because you're not you can't move as much. And I was like, fair.
And that's another risk factor is actually, you know, like breaking a leg or kind of, we call it immobility, right? So whether you've broken your leg or you're recovering from something, estrogen, all the women out there, that's actually a risk factor. Smoking,
of course, yeah.
A smoking. Woman who smokes and is on estrogen is a double hit.
Yeah, birth control. Yeah. Smoking.
So for us, that's why for me, I always have my women stop if they're on like an oral contraceptive or like one of those IUDs that secrete estrogen. We have them stop that 30 days before surgery.
Oh, so I would have to stop my birth control.
The estrogen part of it.
Well, I mean, it's just a little birth
control. That's all it is. Some of them are progesterone only.
Oh, really? I don't even know what mine is. I should probably take a look.
Yeah. So we usually look because I mean, I always get names from patients and I'm sitting there on Google trying to find out if it's estrogen or progesterone and estrogen, or sometimes it's progesterone only. So there are progesterone only ones. Yeah. Usually we'll have patients stop it. I mean, you know, when you tell, and again, like most women are like, well, yeah, but I'm like, I need this. And it's like, well, it's a risk. Like I'm trying to protect you from dying here. So I think most people get it. They're like, okay, I can stop it for 2 months. Or switch to something different for a few months. What were we talking about? Risk factors. The blood muscles. Clots. Okay. Back to the, blood clots.
So it's not a thigh. I would think the thighs would be the big, because you ain't moving when you get a, you're not going to be up and like.
So the reason is, right, your veins go from your legs and then they get into your abdomen, right, into your inferior vena cava, right? The big IVC, that's the big vessel that goes into the heart for the bottom part of your body, and then you've got the superior one that comes from the head and the heart, or the head and the arms. Anyway, so when you do a tummy tuck and you're tightening the abdominal wall, right, so we've tightened this core, you have tightened the intra-abdominal pressure or increased the intra-abdominal pressure, and the blood coming back to your heart has a harder time. There's like an increased pressure gradient now, and that's why tummy tucks have the highest risk, because blood coming from your feet up into your IVC has a harder time flowing.
Got it.
And so that's the big theory we suspect that causes that increased risk of DVTs with tummy tucks.
Is that part of the muscle repair?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. which we all get when we do a tummy tuck. Yes.
You should get when you get a tummy tuck. Yes.
I know. I've heard of girls that didn't. So
no, I didn't until the last one.
Yeah. See,
there were some, yeah, I've had women too. Like I did a revision a few months ago on a lady who told me she had a tummy tuck and she came back. I mean, she had many things done wrong, unfortunately, but she had a fleur-de-lis when she really needed a lower body lift. So we took her back, we did the lower body lift, and then I'm looking at her post-op, and I'm like, and as kind of time went on, her belly just got kind of rounder and rounder, and I'm like, did the first surgeon not do like a real tummy tuck? Like, did not tighten your muscles? And she said, I don't know, that's what I was told I had done. And I said, we were going back, she had breast cancer, so we were going back and fixing her breasts. And I told her, would you allow me to just go in and reopen this incision and tighten your abdominal wall for you? Because it's just like you've spent all this time and energy losing weight and money. And I don't think the previous surgeon tightened your abdominal wall. And so she allowed us to do that on her next stage. And we took her back and she was wide. And I couldn't find any old sutures or any evidence that she'd had a repair. So, I mean, I think a lot of times people say they get or doing a tummy tuck and they're not. So definitely be careful.
I think particularly if you're young, because I think there was an assumption that I didn't need it. But then when they actually went in there, the second surgeon went in there, I needed tightening on the top, on the bottom, all over. So I'm like,
oh no.
I don't know how that got missed.
Age has nothing to do with the laxity of your abdominal wall, especially if you've been overweight or obese. I mean, that is like a pregnancy, right? I mean, it's you're stretching your abdominal wall. Just I'm not saying it's the same thing as having a baby, but it's the same physiological.
Especially for how I carried my weight, there was no way that I didn't have. I was all
belly
forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
And particularly the tiree where it's like two.
I've heard people say like, oh, well, my surgeon said I didn't need it. Or I'm like,
I know,
feel like that's all a bunch of baloney, but anyway.
Well, but I'm glad you're saying it. Yeah, like you're paying for it. Like if it's in there, like make sure it's done, ladies and jets. Yeah. Like,
yeah, because that ultimately is what made it look the best. Probably isn't the best way to say that. But like what I ultimately needed was both the skin removed from the top, but the muscle repair to bring everything up. And
right, it like tightens you in. Gives you kind of more shape, I would assume.
And it's crazy because you can feel it.
Yeah.
It's weird. You're not as smushy.
And even men, you know, men who've been overweight, same thing, right? They've never had babies, but even if they're 25, but they used to weigh 400 pounds, they're going to need a diastasis repair, so.
Oh, so it's it's not just us ladies. It's everyone that's overweight. It's a human being thing, so. So what's one thing you wish every patient understood about safety in the modern plastic surgery?
Oof. Better prep me for this one. That's a good question. Something I wish every patient knew about safety.
It was like one thing that you wish they knew.
That's a tough question.
Because you guys have to do protocols. Like there's protocols for you guys. So.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't know that there's any protocols that everyone abides by. I would say, and you know, we have protocols, but that doesn't mean that the surgeon down the street or even the surgeon, even my partners, we don't all use necessarily the same protocols. The hospital has protocols, right? I mean, in the sense of like these SCDs we were just talking about, that's like a rule. Every patient who comes in gets SCDs put on. And if it doesn't happen, that's like a big event that we have to report and find out why it didn't happen. But the number one thing, man, I don't know. I would say for me, I mean, I'm going to put safety first for my patients. So no matter what, like I was saying earlier, even if it's something as that sounds super serious to the patient in terms of stopping estrogen, but it's a really small thing to do and it can decrease your risk of blood clots significantly, we're going to do it because we can modify it, right? Same like smoking. We don't operate on smokers because why take that risk? Whether you're the patient or I'm the surgeon, I don't want you to have that risk and I don't want to take the risk of operating on a smoker. So,
So I think from a behavioral health, that mine is always like, be honest with your surgeon about those risk factors and do what do what you say you're going to do. If your surgeon tells you you cannot smoke or you need to come off your birth control or whatever the risk is, you need to be honest that it was a risk to begin with, or I was never told not to use my sleep apnea machine. I just felt better and I stopped using it. Like, you probably should be honest about that, because that
happened last week.
Oh, really?
And the thing is, you're safer with it because it has settings and we already know what's happening and it's gathering information. And it's like, yeah, because I have clients that will tell me that. They're like, well, I just stopped using it. I don't need it anymore. I'm like, did a doctor tell you that? Or that's just how you feel?
I mean, we usually dig those out too. That's what happened last week. I had a patient who I'd seen somewhere in their chart, like CPAP. And I said, oh, do you still use the CPAP? And they said, no. I said, well, do you have a pulmonologist? He said, yeah, but I haven't been in years. And I was like, so did they stop the CPAP or did you? And he said, well, I just didn't really need it anymore. I was like, okay, we're going to need a clearance from your pulmonologist.
Yep. So,
and yeah, people try to be annoyed by that and been like, I don't need that anymore. Good. Go to the pulmonologist.
Yeah,
and
have someone who specializes in this tell me that, not
prove
your
it so that you are safe.
Google degree. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think particularly with sleep apnea, or even I had a client tell me, like, they stopped taking their aspirin and they're like, well, I feel more vivacious and I feel good, so I'm not taking it anymore. And I was like, well, did the cardiologist tell you to stop? Well, I lost all this weight. I was like, did the cardiologist, like, because I don't know if that was weight related that you were on or something that weight alone. And I don't know, because I'm not the doctor, but like, I think we should probably have a conversation, because oftentimes there's this mental health component to it. Yeah. That is, if I don't take it, that I don't have to acknowledge I have it. And when I take it every day, I ran into this when I worked in a dialysis unit where I had this client that like would not hook up. And I understood, because every night that she hooked up, so she did at-home dialysis, she had to acknowledge that she was sick. And if she didn't do it, she would die. And that was really hard. So sometimes when people are taking medicine, they're like, Ashton, I can't take this medication, particularly mental health medication. It's because you have to acknowledge that something's wrong and you're taking medication for it. And so that's probably something that we need to work on. Maybe not with the doctor, you know, that's maybe not the doctor to work on. But yeah, if you should be taking aspirin and you stop taking aspirin, we should probably let the doctor know and figure out, do you need to be on aspirin? Is there anything else? You're going to have to come off of it. But is there something else we need to do? Maybe post-op differently, maybe, you know. So I think from a mental health standpoint, the biggest safety is you being very honest and doing, when they ask you to do something, to do it.
And we'll find out if you're lying. Ashton should have answered this question, not me.
Well, no, but I think too.
He gave a great answer.
Like I had a client who lied about like when they stopped eating before surgery. Like they went into.
Oh yeah. You know, I mean, you're right, because the scary thing is you put yourself at risk, right? When you do that, because I mean, a lot of what we do is for your safety. We're not here for our safety. And so, yeah, when you say like, oh, yeah, my last meal was 8 hours ago, which we generally like patients that not have eaten for 8 hours before surgery, and they go to put you to sleep and you really ate 2 hours ago, well, you know, the medication's going to make you puke and then you can aspirate, right? That's where the food goes down your trachea. And now you've got pneumonia, right? So that can be a very bad complication.
Wait, you can technically give yourself pneumonia by doing that?
You can die from that, correct? Mm-hmm.
You
could
die from pneumonia, yeah.
You could die, yeah.
Or from just from the aspiration, right?
Like if you aspirate, I mean, yeah, essentially you're going to aspirate like food, you know, but usually it's not food. It's like acid, right? Like stomach contents. It's acidic. Mm-hmm. You've got acid now going down your trachea into your lungs. And if there's a lot of it, you can. I mean, you'll get sick for sure. You get pneumonia and you could die. That's a fatal problem, potentially fatal problem. So.
And very avoidable.
And very avoidable.
Very, that one is so in your control.
I had like a simple day surgery, and the guy across from me had eaten a donut. His mom was yelling at him that he should have lied and not told them that he ate the donut, so that they could they were doing some kind of surgery. They could do awake, but it was going to be pretty uncomfortable, but they couldn't give him anesthesia because he ate the donut. And I could hear him and his mom arguing about that he should have lied and said he didn't eat the donut in the morning. And I was like, no, he ate a donut. Like he ate food like an hour before he got there. Like,
oh shit.
No. So it's like, always be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what it feels like to be uncomfortable. Like when I went and did my my yearly checkup or whatever, you know, like I do, I'm in Oregon, it's legal to smoke marijuana. And when we got to that question, I was like, yes, I do. And I was very honest with it. But at first I was like, I don't want to tell her. Like, but like now it wasn't even a thing. She was like, okay, done. And then moved on.
In Oregon, I'm sure she's pretty used to it.
Right. It was just me being like scared and a little anxiety. I started sweating. Like, it was just so ridiculous. But it's like, you just don't know who's going to be weird about it or not weird about it. But it's becoming so much more common. But like, I had to say it. That was the deal. Because you just don't know what is that going to affect.
Yeah. Same thing with alcohol use. If you are really honest with yourself and you're drinking 3 to 5 drinks a night, like, your surgeon probably needs, like, we need to make a plan to reduce that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there's surgical risk in that much alcohol, correct?
That would have to be.
Probably, well, A, your liver is probably not in very good shape. But B, it's not so much the alcohol, it's the withdrawal that becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually where the issue is.
And it's hard to know.
People who drink 3 drinks a day, they're okay, but if they withdraw, you know, then that's a problem.
And it's hard to know that cutoff of like what could possibly be the problematic alcohol to come off of versus like it's okay for you to come off. I don't know. It's complicated. But again, be honest about that because that may be something, you know, vodka. Once had a client tell me that vodka is a clear liquid. He's getting a colonoscopy and he was
they're not wrong.
It's a clear liquid. And I was like, you cannot drink the night before you go to have a colonoscopy. I'm like, no.
Well, piggyback on that, you're not supposed to drink any alcohol before a surgery, right? Like this, none.
Can't have vodka right before you have a colonoscopy. Be dehydrated.
Well, I mean, you probably shouldn't be because you should be having your prep. But I don't, I mean, I had a colonoscopy years ago. I can't remember what I was allowed and not allowed to do, but I'm sure you're right. I'm just trying to think. He's not wrong. It is a clear liquid. Like,
but for you don't want them drinking the night before surgery, correct?
I don't think it matters. I mean, again, really? I'm like, don't have like a, I don't know, what's a large volume of vodka? I'm not a big, I mean, I drink, but I'm not a big drinker. Like, don't have a gallon of vodka, but if you have like a shot or
you're
something,
not worried
or
about
a
it,
beer.
Like, no, shots are a mental health provider. Shots are a bad idea. Always a bad idea.
Okay, don't listen
Never
to me.
Never had a shot that I thought was a good idea after that. No, but like dehydrating, no, you're good.
Right?
Like, go out and party.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not like if you have one drink, I think you'll be okay. I mean, I'm not saying like, I'm not condoning this, but I'm saying like if you want to drink, like maybe to take some nerves off or you're feeling stressed and you're like, you know what, I really need a beer, I think you'll be fine.
But they shouldn't be getting hammered.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Okay. I just said one drink.
One drink, guys. You get one.
Oh, bariatric patients, that may be one.
That may be too much. That's true. Yeah.
Take a half. There you go. Oh,
but
my
goodness. Be honest with your surgeon for risk factors, because I think oftentimes, yes, there are probably some unpreventable deaths that like we did not know things happened that were out of our control, but I wonder if you looked at like a study of all of the deaths that occurred, like how many of them were preventable? I'm sure,
so
that's
a great
there, but...
that's a great question because
that's a good question. I'm not sure that's been. I haven't come across a study like that. I have to go back and do some digging.
Well, because Ashlyn, you know, like a lot of this is a big control issue, right? So it's like if we know all the things that can prevent this, it will make you feel more in control. So you really should be giving out all the information you can think of to make sure you're safe.
Right. And
like just
even if
line.
They don't say it, if you know you've had a pulmonologist, you may want to talk about that you may need a pulmonologist. Like, do you feel I need a pulmonology clearance at this point? I've had a cardiologist. Do you think I need a speak up and ask those questions versus being like, oh, well, they'd bring it up if I needed it. But you may have a history that if they don't know about, they may not know about it.
Yeah, definitely. If you see specialists and you still see them, right, then you should let your plastic surgeon or any surgeon.
Even if you don't.
Sorry?
What?
Even if you should see them.
Yeah, if you should see them. I mean, what I meant to say was if they've cleared you or like, oh, you know, like maybe you had, you know, like sleep apnea and you don't no longer need a CPAP and your pulmonologist said you don't have to come back and see me, then I don't need to know about that, doctor. But if they've told you come back and see me in a year and it's been 3 years since you've seen them because you stopped going, that's a different situation. Yeah.
Right. Big
or you're
story.
Noticing things that make you think that your sleep apnea may be coming back. So let's figure that out. Mm-hmm. Clear it, be okay, you know, versus like put my head in the sand and pretend that it'll be fine.
And I mean, I'll say, you know, again, speaking for myself, I have a great team. I mean, I've had the same nurse for 5 or 6 years now. I've got the same, mostly same group of people. My nurse, if I miss something, 99% of the time she's going to catch it because she knows my protocols. She knows what I like. If she walks in and notices, like, oh, hey, I noticed this patient's on aspirin. You must have missed that. And when I start, you know, she'll dig in and she'll say they had a cardiologist they didn't tell you about. So then she'll say, you're going to get a cardiac clearance. So she'll pick up on things that every once in a while, you know, no one's perfect. I will miss and then she will catch. And luckily, I think between the both of us, we miss very, very few things. Right. So,
but it's also on the patient to say, I'm on aspirin. I have a cardiologist.
Tell them all of your meds, guys. Right.
Be honest.
Because they ask that. I've been asked it in everything. Like, what meds are you on right now? What are you taking? Mm-hmm. So, like, because I know my Lexapro doesn't mix well with Zofran. So, they shouldn't be giving me Zofran if I feel nauseous in the hospital. Because it could actually make other side effects, apparently. I did not know that.
Right.
So what would you guys, as we wrap up here for the death talk, what are your kind of like last words for everyone about like their fears around death and what they should really be doing and thinking about?
As my comment was last time, it'll be the same this time. Talk to your surgeon, be honest about your fears, be honest about what's happening for you, your medical history. Let's try to negate what we can negate. But that really relies on you being honest about your medical history, things that you've noticed. There's, you know, if you go and get a clearance and the answer is you're fine, great. Like there's no harm in that. Obviously we don't need to go overboard and get unnecessary ones, but I think be honest with your surgeon about your risks. Talk to your surgeon if your fear is death, so they could talk to you about like what are the actual risks and are there ways that we can negate them. And maybe some of the factual information around like how many deaths have we seen with this procedure. That information is out there if that would be helpful for you. For some people that may be and other people it may not. I mean, kind of putting it in perspective about lightning strikes is kind of interesting because we certainly, Florida's the lightning strike capital of the United States. We still go outside all the time when it rains and we just, you know, don't stand by light poles.
You know, you're not supposed to shower when there's lightning. I learned that this year.
I've heard that. I've done it and I never realized.
I've done it too. And I'm like, oh man, I guess I've skirted death.
But it is interesting because there are people like where Dr. Bates and I are from, like who have been struck by lightning. I live right next to a school where like a parent child was struck by it. But again, incredibly, incredibly rare. But if it's your fear, talk about it, get facts, get information. It, oftentimes with anxiety, I'm like, answer the anxiety. Like, what is the risk? Don't try to talk yourself out of it because it is a possibility. So we're just going to negate it. We're not going to pretend like it's not a possibility.
I like it, Ashlyn. And Dr. Bates?
Yeah, I would echo that. I think the other thing, God, I had a thought here for a second. Other than being honest, I think the risk of something happening is so exceedingly low. Again, we're talking about in general, these are elective cases. These are healthy people for the most part. And as long as you have risk factors that are either controllable or modifiable, we have a surgeon who's looking very carefully at your safety, right? So for us, it's no smoking. We're going to control your birth control, your estrogen levels. We want that. We want you off of that. If you have a higher risk of blood clots, we'll give patients a blood thinner before surgery. And for some patients, like our tummy tuck and lower body lift patients, we've started putting them on Eliquis, which is another blood thinner after surgery, right? Because we talked about why it's a high risk before. So we want to control that after. Not everyone does that, but I would say go to a surgeon who's going to kind of think through all these things and try to minimize as much as possible complications and not just do what they were taught or, you know, well, this is how I've always done it. And I've had like 3 DVTs in my lifetime. Well, that's still not, you know, I mean, my goal is to be as close to 0 as possible. So to me, 1 is 1 too many. So I would say that would be my kind of message.
Well, and I want to just tell people, like, think about it. Like, make sure you have a board certified surgeon. I don't want you guys going to anybody that's not board certified. There's a reason why they have to go to school and do all these things. That will help you feel better. You can look them up online and see what their rates, like their death rates are and like what their experience is. If there's ever, I know in Oregon, we can actually even see if you've had a malpractice suit. So just do your research on your person, because they are the ones that are going to be doing the whole surgery. They're going to be all up in you, you know? So, and I, of course, and I always talk about this, is just make sure you talk to your therapist as well that you are getting surgery. Let's not hide anything from anybody. Be very honest with not just your surgeon, but with your therapist, so that way they can help you with your fears around dying, because I know it's one of mine. I think it's not anymore, to be honest with you. Like, it just seems like another surgery, nothing to really worry about. I know I want to do the 360. So, I definitely will, the blood clot thing will be on my mind, but I will, you know, do the measures to make sure that doesn't
happen. Get some Eliquis.
I'll get some Eliquis. I'll have Dr. Bates, because he's going to do it. He just says, I just don't know when, but he will prescribe me that and then I'll be okay. So remember, like, just, this is your body and this is your life. So you should be the one that's doing the research and not being like, well, I'm not going to tell them so I can get it done sooner. I've heard that comment before through the community. So be careful, guys. Like, it's, you've waited this long. What is a couple extra weeks by you're just getting the clearance, right? I think your life is worth it. I think your mental health is worth it. And you definitely want to wake up and be happy with yourself, with past you, you know? So yeah, like, make sure, if you guys need anything, again, you can message us on Instagram. You can message the podcast, straight to us. If you need anything, leave comments below, because your safety is number one at all times. So, all righty, guys. Well, you guys have a great week, and thank you for listening to the Cutting Edge Podcast, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.